It's Monday, February 8th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, reaction to North Korea's rocket launch.
And they tend to wait to the last minute. They tend to really scrutinize their choices.
It's cold in New Hampshire for voters, but the road to the White House is hot with rhetoric. Also ahead, 50 years of the Super Bowl, the big games today. Lady Gaga will be there, and seemingly everywhere. It's all coming up on today's International Edition. The UN Security Council has strongly condemned North Korea's launch of a long-range rocket on Sunday. The rocket, carrying what Pyongyang said was a satellite, was launched on Saturday from near the northwestern border with China. In a rare Sunday session, Security Council members met behind closed doors for 90 minutes to discuss the next steps for dealing with the defiant Asian nation. The United States and even close ally China denounced the launch. Joining us from Hangzhou, China, is Greg Moore, Associate Professor of International Relations at Zhejiang University and also contributor to the book North Korean Nuclear Operationality. Professor Moore, what is the goal of this North Korean launch and how do we respond?
The issue is, can they marry this technology to a bomb that can be dropped from an airplane? Can they miniaturize it to put it on a missile or in a suitcase or whatever? That's the issue. And if they're able to do that, I think China, first of all, China doesn't really trust North Korea. Some of the people I talked to here in China have said, you know, we're not even sure that they wouldn't point those things at us and try to extort something out of us using that as a sort of chip or a threat. You know, that's probably lower on the list of their concerns for the most part. But that's always a possibility. But I think the key issue is they're worried that it's going to cause some sort of regional conflict that then is going to cause a division in the region, traditional Cold War lines with China, North Korea, and maybe Russia on one side, and Japan, South Korea, and the U.S. on another side. I think that's their main concern, that this is going to, you know, force a conflict in the region, maybe a U.S. military intervention in North Korea on the Korean Peninsula, which is not what China wants to see. China doesn't want to go back to 1950, you know, and so I think that's their primary security concern. But the other issue is that they're very concerned about regime stability. I don't think they like the regime in Pyongyang, frankly. I mean, I really don't think they do. They see it as anachronistic and just completely out of date and living in the past. They're worried about a regime collapse where thousands and thousands of poor North Koreans would flow across the border into northeast China and destabilize China. And that's something they're very worried about.
Would the distance from North Korea to points in the U.S. or even in the Pacific, like Guam and Hawaii, we are developing greater and greater abilities to shoot missiles out of the air, and the Pacific is a big area. If we happen to see one coming over the ocean, we would have a lot of real estate there in which to deal with it.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think the jury's still out on how good our anti-ballistic missile capabilities are. But like you said, we're developing those capabilities. And you know, there's those things set up in Alaska there right now. So if they tried to shoot Alaska, there's a good chance the U.S. would be able to take those out. You know, these things are, our technology is evolving and so is theirs. So moving forward, time is not on our side on this thing. You know, that's why we really need to deal with this. And since 1994, we've made just almost no progress, speaking especially about U.S. policy here. North Korea's just been, we may have slowed them down a little bit, especially with the 94 agreed framework deal. That probably slowed them down a little bit, but you know, they've just been marching forward with this, and the U.S. has been distracted by so many other things, especially since 9/11. We need to take this seriously, and I'm not saying we need to be aggressive and invade North Korea and take these things out or whatever. That's not my point at all. But I'm saying that diplomatically, we need to be very aggressive because this is a very dangerous issue. This North Korean nuclear weapons operationality issue is a very, very dangerous and I would say pressing issue. And it has not been at the top of U.S. foreign policy, waiting and, you know, trying the slow approach. There's times when that's the right approach, but I just don't think we can continue to do that forever because it's not going to be too much longer before they're going to get a real operational capability.
Professor Greg Moore from Hangzhou, China. Well, continuing with Pyongyang's rocket launch, let's check out what people are saying about it. Online, International Edition social media correspondent G. Abby Lee is here to do just that. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim.
What's the reaction like from internet users in South Korea?
Well, many South Koreans are demanding strong responses from both their own government and the international community. Yonhap News Agency has been reporting throughout the weekend about the rocket launch, and one of the reports is about the UN Security Council unanimously condemning Pyongyang for defying sanctions and launching a rocket, and these are the top three comments. Please take a proper measure, not just with words, but with action. The second most liked comment was basically an echo of the top comment, and the third one was a rhetorical question asking, what is the point of these condemnations alone? So it's almost an understatement to say people are frustrated with what they see as a non-action by the international community.
Yes, and especially ironic because the current Secretary General is a former South Korean diplomat.
That's a great point. Now, the South Korean public is also urging its own government to show a stronger stance against the North. Joseon Ilbo is one of the most conservative newspapers in the country and wrote about President Park Geun-hye criticizing the rocket launch as an unacceptable provocation. The most liked comment under that article reads like this. We have heard the word unacceptable numerous times. Please show what you mean with action. Nearly 3,000 people liked it, and there was also a dislike button, which around 100 people used.
Well, so that's the overriding sentiment in the South. Mm-hmm. What about some of the other perspectives on the issue?
Jim, the Chinese government's role in dealing with the North is a lot more important than most people realize, so let's talk about that a little bit. Yonhap reported Beijing summoned North Korean ambassador to China, Ji Jae-ryung, to the foreign ministry Saturday, and the most liked comment to that article reads like this. We don't care what you, referring to Beijing, do. You lost our trust. The government should hurry up with a THAAD missile defense system and strengthen our alliance with Washington. Now, what's really interesting is that THAAD, which stands for the U.S.-made Terminal High Altitude Area Defense System, became more or less a household vocabulary in the South because it pops up in almost all the defense-related articles. For the longest time, Seoul had a lukewarm attitude to the system because of Beijing's strong dissent. But with the latest provocation, the South Korean government gave the green light to the deployment.
Well, maybe the silver lining here is that it will strengthen Washington's alliance with mm-hmm. Seoul and Tokyo. Thanks for that great wrap-up, G. You can follow her on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. I'm out there as well, at VOA Stevenson. And, of course, our program's account is at VOA underscore IE. This is VOA.
The news never stops. So keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
News happens around the clock. And VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock, on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
This is VOA's International Edition. The road to the White House goes through the northeastern state of New Hampshire Tuesday, as voters there take part in the first of the state-by-state primaries to select a party nominee for president in the November national election. VOA senior national correspondent Jim Malone is on the line from what we know as the Granite State. But Jim, the candidates aren't throwing rocks. Instead, a lot of words, especially the Republicans in their debate Saturday.
The Republicans had quite a feisty debate, and you can tell that the pressure of performing in the upcoming New Hampshire primary is really on their minds. I'd say the number one target in the Republican debate turned out to be Florida Senator Marco Rubio. He went through a difficult period in the debate where he was challenged by New Jersey Governor Chris Christie about his, what Christie believes, his lack of experience, and Rubio kept repeating the same mantra over and over again about challenging the sort of view that President Obama has about how to run the country. And I have to say that this sort of became the headline out of the debate. Not great timing for Rubio. He had been surging a bit in some of the polls.
here in New Hampshire. He had a good finish in Iowa. So whether or not this stalls his momentum in the final days, we'll have to see.
The Democrats certainly are having a war of words themselves. We're down to essentially two candidates, Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, and Bernie Sanders trying to make the point that Hillary is not a progressive candidate.
Yeah, this has really become the focal point of the debate. And, you know, one of the reasons for that, Jim, is that in both parties, the sort of fringes on either side get really involved in the primary and caucus vote. So in the Democratic Party, it's the sort of liberal left, the progressives, who are flocking to Bernie Sanders, especially young people. And some of my VOA colleagues have noted that again up here in New Hampshire, as we saw in Iowa. So Sanders seems to have a hold on them. Hillary Clinton is trying to regain some ground here. She trails in New Hampshire by a fair bit. They're hoping they can narrow the gap between now and Tuesday, primary day. But Clinton also has a longer strategy. And even though we expect this debate between the two of them to go on as to who is more progressive, Clinton can look to states like Nevada with its large Hispanic population and South Carolina later in the month with its sizable African-American community. Clinton believes, their campaign believes, they have a firewall with minority voters. And so far, from what we can tell, that's been a challenge for Bernie Sanders to break beyond sort of white progressives and draw in some minority voters.
Well, weather is never an obstacle for people in New Hampshire because they're just used to it. We saw quite a bit of energy in Iowa. Do you feel that energy in New Hampshire among voters?
You know, I do, and it's a different type. I got to tell you, I've been talking to many voters. Here's the thing. They're like shoppers. You go to a rally, and you'll ask them, and they'll say, well, this is the fourth, fifth, or sixth time they've seen some of the different candidates. And, of course, you then ask them, so have you decided? No, I haven't. I'm going to wait till the last minute. This is what makes New Hampshire really interesting. They're more independent types of voters, even if they're Republicans. They're a little bit more moderate than, say, in Iowa. And they tend to wait to the last minute. They tend to really scrutinize their choices. And you know what? Be careful of the polls, because at the very end, they can surprise you. And I think on the Republican side, we've got a huge scramble right now. Trump seems to be leading. But you've got about four candidates who would love to come in second. And once we clear New Hampshire, how many Republican candidates will stay in the race?
Well, while the poll numbers are suspect, we can always trust your great insight. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone, thanks so much for joining us.
Anytime.
Well, while millions of people across the world are celebrating the Lunar New Year right now, and Jinin Kuai Le to our Chinese listeners, here in the United States, we care about and a lot about our football. And this is our annual celebration of American-style football and its championship game, the Super Bowl, which, by the way, turns 50 today. It's the Denver Broncos and the Carolina Panthers playing for glory. Joining us from Santa Clara, California, is our very own VOA sports editor Park Brewer at Super Bowl 50.
Yes, it is, Jim. The golden anniversary, as they're calling it, and the logo features the 50 and the gold color very prominently. I think this is a game that just about everybody would like to see. It's two of the best teams in the league, the Carolina Panthers. They went in the regular season 15-1. Only a late-season loss kept them from becoming undefeated. They have the quarterback in the league who's considered the best. He's a great runner, great passer. We're talking about Cam Newton, a real big guy, too, one of the biggest quarterbacks you'll see. On the other side, you have the Denver Broncos and Peyton Manning. What can you say about Peyton? He's one of the best all-time quarterbacks in the NFL, all-time leader in yards and touchdowns. And what's so interesting about this is the age difference between these quarterbacks, Jim. Peyton Manning is going to be 40 next month. And for those who don't know, that is mighty old for a quarterback and certainly incredibly old for a star quarterback. He's just a kind of a miracle-type player to have stuck around that long and be so good at his age. On the other hand, Cam Newton, 26 years old. He's got it all going for him. Very brash, outgoing player. Some think maybe a little too brash. He does little dances when he gets into the end zone, and he can run for touchdowns as well as throw for touchdowns. But there's no doubt this game is going to be incredibly exciting. We don't know if it's going to be incredibly close. That's the big key. The Panthers are favored by about 6 points. That's the equivalent of about a touchdown or two field goals. We'll see what happens. The weather here is, for this game is way warmer than normal. in this part of California for this time of year, Jim. The temperature at game time is going to be about 70 to 72 degrees, which converts to about 20 to 22 degrees Celsius. That's quite a bit warmer than they usually have for this time of year. The sun is out, no chance of rain, and they're expecting a big crowd. Security very tight, and we'll see it all how it all plays out.
Peyton Manning, an interesting case, probably the last time we're going to see him on the field. And he's got a little score to settle with his baby brother, Eli, because Eli has two rings and Peyton only has one.
Well, that's right, but you also have to consider that Peyton Manning has led two different teams to the Super Bowl. He won his only championship when playing for the Indianapolis Colts. He got them to the Super Bowl twice. This is the second time he's gotten the Denver Broncos to the Super Bowl. The first time suffered a very bad loss to the Seattle Seahawks a couple of years ago. So I think if you would ask fans all across the country which team they would like to see win, a lot of them are pulling for the Denver Broncos because they want to see Peyton Manning win this game and then retire as a winner and at least have the same number of Super Bowl championships that his brother Eli has. And, of course, Peyton considered really a better quarterback than Eli. So I think a lot of people are pulling for Peyton Manning, Jim.
Being the 50th Super Bowl, of course, there's a lot of nostalgia going on. You've been to a lot of these. I've been to a few of them. We remember some great Super Bowl history this weekend.
That's right. And, you know, it's interesting that early on in Super Bowls, a lot of games were lopsided. But over the last decade, most of these games have been incredibly close and incredibly exciting, coming down to the last few minutes of the game. I'm sure fans would love to see that here again today. We don't want to see a blowout like we saw Peyton in, you know, a couple of years ago against the Seahawks. It'd be nice to see a good close game that's decided in the last few minutes, I'm sure.
All right, Park Brewer at Super Bowl 50 in Santa Clara, California. Enjoy it, Park.
All right. Thanks much, Jim. Nice chatting.
And we know many of you around the world will be watching along with us. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
It's going to be hard for anyone not to see Lady Gaga this month. She's back and with a very full itinerary, starting with Super Bowl 50, just a short time from now. VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald is here to fill us in on what she's up to.
It doesn't matter if you love him or capital H-I-M-A-M.
She is poised for a gigantic February, Jim, and she may carry some momentum into the year. She will sing the national anthem prior to Super Bowl 50.
I hear that attracts a little audience.
Yeah, a tiny little audience in just about every country on
right.
Earth. She'll be following in the footsteps of Whitney Houston, who sang it in 1991, probably the best national anthem rendition ever.
Mm-hmm.
And Christina Aguilera did it in 2011. There have been several other big names who have sung it, so that'll give her some visibility. And then 8 days later, on February 15th, Lady Gaga will perform a tribute to the late David Bowie at the Grammy Awards. Bowie is getting a Lifetime Achievement Award, and Lady Gaga says that he was a huge influence on her music and her theatricality, and so this is her chance to say thank you to David Bowie.
She may have even inspired some of her outfits from the Bowie era.
Well, yeah, and that's an interesting point, because Lady Gaga was known for her craziness. She really brought the crazy earlier on in her career with the meat dress and all of these other things. Just back in 2013, her Art Pop album was seen as a bit of a commercial disappointment. Some people even called it a flop. The general perception was that Lady Gaga was just trying too hard. she has really remarkably rehabilitated her career. She did a 180 and teamed up with Tony Bennett. Now, the two of them are supposedly very good friends. They did an album together, Cheek to Cheek, which won a Grammy Award. Gaga's won 6 Grammy Awards. They toured together, and the cascade of awards continues for Lady Gaga in 2016. Last month, she won a Golden Globe Award for her acting in the series American Horror Story, Hotel. And then she's up for an Oscar for Best Original Song. It's called Till It Happens to You from a movie called The Hunting Ground. Lady Gaga is one of those artists who seem to have a pretty good handle on what she needs to do to get back on top. She's repositioning herself in the pop marketplace. 2015 was seen as a quiet year for her, but she still made $59 million.
That's not bad.
Yeah, she's making out okay. She has a full-length album on the way. Elton John is involved. Mark Ronson is involved. He's the man behind the huge hit Uptown Funk. We don't have a release date for the album yet, but it's going to be sometime this year. Once that album drops, you know that there's going to be a world tour. So it's going to be very interesting seeing, Lady Gaga 2.0.
Mm-hmm.
The national anthem, the Star-Spangled Banner, is a very difficult song to properly sing. And I think she's absolutely going
to
kill it.
We look
in
forward
a good way.
It. Absolutely. We look forward to it. As we look forward each week to the Top 20 Countdown, Ray McDonald is your host right here on VOA. And you can also find Ray on Twitter.
Ray on the hits.
Thanks so much for stopping by, Ray.
Hey, my pleasure, Jim.
All right, sounds like you're going to be listening to a lot of Lady Gaga this month. For the last 30 minutes, you've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. We're also out there on Twitter, our handle, @VOA_IE. We think we got a pretty good stream out there. Why don't you check it out? We've got a pretty good engineer and director as well. Our engineer, Daryl Smith, and our director, Tracy Carter. We thank you both so much. And we thank you for joining us today. Come back and visit again. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Have a Super Bowl day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
U.S. Ambassador to Nigeria James Entwistle was present at the Memorandum of Understanding signing ceremony in Kaduna, Nigeria in late January for routine immunization in Borno, Kaduna, Sokoto, and Bauchi states. I am proud that the U.S. government is joining the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the Dangote Foundation in the strong pursuit to end vaccine-preventable child deaths in Nigeria, said Ambassador Entwistle. Under this partnership, we are helping Sokoto State to increase and sustain high immunization coverage. This occasion demonstrates the willingness and commitment of your governments and organizations to tackle the challenges to achieving these goals. The United States provides significant resources, more than $500 million annually, for programs to address serious health issues, such as child mortality, maternal and newborn health, HIV/AIDS, malaria, and tuberculosis. These MOUs offer the model platform to capitalize on the prospects of evidence-based approaches, said Ambassador Entwistle. Results will include stronger systems for immunizations, equal access to routine immunization services, and building capacity for Nigerian states like Sokoto to lead in developing solutions for its people. Perhaps even more importantly, these agreements serve as a model on which to base future partnerships between development partners and the government of Nigeria. Ensuring transparency and accountability in the implementation of this program demonstrates the pledge of the governments of all the states involved to ensuring they meet their responsibilities to their constituents. Essential health services, like routine immunization programs, can only be provided when all partners are coordinated and committed in this manner. Immunization represents one of the most cost-effective public health interventions. Routine immunization services, when sustained, reduce maternal and child illnesses and deaths and free up other resources for economic development. Under this partnership, the U.S. government will maintain its focus on Sokoto State, offering quality technical assistance in support of the partners' harmonized work plan in that state. Our ultimate goal, said Ambassador